Welcome to the Red Caps Podcast, a podcast where we dip our caps into the blood of our listeners and we ramble on about old school games. Guys, I have been searching for ages, near and far, north and south, east and west, across vast nations, trying to find the true meaning of the OSR. I finally found it. It was in Italy. It was by this little company called Tin Hat Games, and they've got a Kickstarter going on right now called The True OSR. We're going to sit down with its creator and talk about all about it. As you know, no mortal can outrun a red cap. So as always, I hope you can sit back, listen, and enjoy. You should know going into this episode that there will be a little bit of language. So if you've got children around, maybe earmuff them up. And almost everything that's being done in this episode is parody-based. So, you know, bring it with a little bit of salt and a smile on your face and some humor. But I had a fantastic time speaking with Alessandro. We talked a bunch about the games that he's created, the different products that his company's put out, metal bands, all kinds of stuff. It was just a really fun conversation, and I really enjoyed having him on the show. So I will throw it over to that conversation and hope you guys enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed having the conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, I am joined by Alex from Tin Hat Games, an Italian game company that is currently live with a Kickstarter that is answering the question I asked in the very first episode of this podcast, what is the OSR? Welcome, Alex. How are you doing today?
Oh, thank you. Thank you, guys. Doing fine. Pretty busy right now since we are right in the middle of our Kickstarter campaign, you know?
Yeah, it's funded for you and it's going well. So before we get into the bunch of burning questions I have about the Kickstarter and your interpretation of the OSR, can you tell me a bit about Tin Hat Games?
Oh, well, yeah, sure. First of all, introduction. Well, Tin Hat Games is a company that was born in 2014, indeed, even though we existed till 2011 as an indie company, you know. So we started with a role-playing game, and then we moved on also to board games. So we did a couple, and then back again to a role-playing game. The most famous one we did till now is Urban Heroes, which is a role-playing game about superheroes. The second edition was out in 2014, of course, and it's about to end. So we're also about to go out with third edition. And it's a very The Boys-like superhero game, since I'm a huge comic book reader, you know? And I've been into that thing way before the TV series came out.
What do you think of the TV series? I've enjoyed it quite a bit. Do you find it's holding as true as you can on a TV series to a comic book of that style?
I'm not very much a television guy, not an internet guy. I'm just a comic book and book reader, you know. So, but I had to watch that one. So I took a look at the first season, and it was quite good. I must say, it was quite honest. Was like the comic pretty much.
Yeah, it's always good to, because I saw the comics after having seen the show, but it's always good to hear from folks that were into the comics before the show. And if they're saying, yeah, that's what we were expecting, then you know that the creators are doing what they were supposed to. Tin Hat Games has a little slogan on this website, the Italian Tabletop Conspiracy. Yeah. I need to know Italian tabletop conspiracy.
we held all the secrets of the board game and role playing game industry. That's why. No, I'm joking. It's just we are very next to the counterculture scene in Italy. Me myself, I come from the heavy metal scene. I've been there all my life. Still, when I got some free time, I jump on the van of some friends' bands, do the driver, the whatever, and tour with them in Europe, you know. All the products are kind of, let's say, punk in some way. So I taught you about Urban Heroes, where you just role play a superhero with superpower, but in the real world. So with Putin, Merkel, and Trump, everything else. And there's real life laws of physics applied with superpower. So it's a game where if you throw a punch against the wall will fall down, but your hand will likely explode if you don't also have super resistance. You know, it's basic physics. Right. So it's very, so in that way, it's very punk. The latest one is Xenoscape. Xenoscape is a Ray Punk role-playing game, which has a unique game system, which is resource management design, which means you don't have to roll dice in that game. You just use dice to keep track of how many points you spend from your system, which is immunity, nervous, and energy systems. So once again, it's very realistic and somehow very punk because it's set in the future. So far away in the future that everything got back. So it's very primitive in an alien world, you know?
I was looking at that one. That one looked really interesting as well. And how many people do you guys have with you? Because when I looked at the website, it looked like there was like five or six of you. So is this like a group that has come together over... that has been together for a long time, or have you guys been adding as the company's grown type idea?
Yeah. That was a step-by-step adding on. In the beginning, it was just three of us, which was me, Matteo, which is my my best partner, and another guy, which is no more with us now, but which helped us really develop all the graphic behind all our products. But then again, the team grew up. So the ones you see in the Kickstarter page right now, it's really, really family. I mean, those guys, even though they are from other parts of Italy, there's even one guy from England that helped us in the past for translation, for editing, and so on, which are really the best guys around. And moreover, we have also other people working with us, which comes without, which are just paid, contract paid, you know, for this issue, you know.
Right.
But we're expanding. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Going to what you mentioned there before. So the aesthetic for the Kickstarter is where I first saw you, and it grabbed my attention for a couple of reasons. One, I'm really into the OSR space, so as soon as I saw the three letters together, I was like, oh, I gotta check, see what this is. And then the humor and the art style behind it grabbed me. So for anybody who has not seen this, first, how about you tell them, what does OSR stand for in your game?
gotta say it. Okay, the acronym is obsolete shitty rules, which is honestly what should honestly be the OSR acronym. Since we're just being honest, even though it's just irony, you know, we do love old school games. I come from old school games. I started role playing when I was just 8, you know, man. And I grew up all the time role-playing. So I started with first edition, Redbox, and then quickly passed to the advanced set of Dungeons & Dragons, of course. And I love that stuff. But it was time to make a parody out of it, because all of this new school of all the school role-playing, which is OSR, old school renaissance, you know.
Yep. And that's what it is. It's a parody, or in some ways it's, while it's poking fun, it's also kind of a love letter at that whole era, because the art style that you have, the way that you've put everything together with the very punk or you know, it feels like comic books and stuff that I saw whenever I was a kid. Like the whole thing kind of has that vibe of it's laughing at itself, but it's also there's a playable game in there as well. And so I've looked at you sent me over the 6 start guide. And so I've gone through that. What's the difference between what's in the 6 start guide versus what is in the Kickstarter? So how are the two products related, and how are they different?
Oh, well, the sixth album is just there to give you a glimpse of what would be the final product, of course. So we just put in it the dungeon table, which lets you randomize an infinite dungeon if you want to, you know. It's very, very detailed. Every table is really detailed and adds every time different details to your dungeon building. But the final game will also feature a cast table with cast archetypes and pre-generated casts connected to these archetypes. So there will be more than 50 cast archetypes that you can fully randomize. I mean, each one will have its pre-generated one, but you can customize it in every single detail. So for example, Seek and Destroy cast, okay, the pre-gen will tell you, okay, you start in a fantasy world and a princess asks you to take down a dragon. Okay, the archetype lets you randomize the starting world. So instead of a fantasy world, could be a cyberpunk, western, future, or whatever. Instead of princess, there could be another NPC. Instead of dragon, another monster. And instead of magic sword, another treasure, you know. So each thing can be customized. So infinite possibilities with this game.
Yeah, so it's... I'm not sure if you're familiar with the game Index Card RPG, but whenever I was kind of looking at what you're going for, where you can have the one rule set that's spanning multiple genres, that's what came into my mindset, was that, oh, well, this is one of those ones, a game where you can use the same foundation and apply it to whatever, you know.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. As the title says, the rules are shitty. I'm honest. The base rule has been made in order to paradise old school rules, so they are pretty shitty. But the real game, the real unique mechanics that you can find in this game is the meta mechanics, the mechanics that can put the players versus the dungeon master.
I was going to ask about that, because you hear a lot of times, so I know I've said this to my players before when I sat down to play with them, where I said, this isn't a you versus me game. I'm cheering for you, but I have to run the world, right? So I give them those reassurances, right? I'm like, I'm not after you, Jim. You know, you and me, we're buddies, but I got to run the world. So I'm cheering for your character, but if you get squashed by this dragon, it's just what the dice happened. It's not me.
Whereas things going on in my world, so.
Yeah. Whereas in your case, though, there is a direct head-to-head clash promoted and encouraged between the DMs and the players, with some obvious, so, you know, in the quick start guide, or sorry, in the six starts guide, you've got in there, you know, just don't be a dick about it. But but you know, there's this intended clash between the player and the GM in the game. Where does that come from, and how does that play out?
Oh, well, what you said explained a lot, and you perfectly got the idea behind the game. I mean, the idea is to take all the old school topics and turn it to extreme, or turn it upside down, let's say. For example, the game book itself will be only table, just table. So you have to randomize everything. Indeed, it is a rule. Every time a player asks something to the dungeon master has to randomize the result. So the question like, how far are the enemies? Could be, okay, it's 1 micron. So you really have it in front of yourself. Or maybe 1,000 kilometers. Okay, so I don't even see them. But this is the meta part, you know. That I was talking about, and yes, this thing, player versus master, is probably the most toxic thing you can get in a role playing game, you know. So some people already told me, you're genius, because everything you say in this role playing game is a guide to how not to bad role play. So if you read it in reverse, let's say, you get a very, very good explanation on how to good role play.
Right. And I didn't think about that, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you know.
Our goal is to
laugh about toxic thing that happens in our role-playing game scene. There are a lot of ways to fight them, which are really good. But I think sometimes ridiculize it is the best way to fight it.
Yeah, the entire thing has to be taken from the perspective of, hey, we're having a laugh here. As long as everybody's got that perspective, I think everything that was in that book is hilarious. The dice mechanic in it, though, is all either D10 or D100 based. So yep. Very much not old school in terms of how that was done. But what made you decide to go with you know, a D10 or a D100 type system with it? Was it just because there were so many tables, or?
Oh no! It just was in order to keep it simple. You just need one dice. Just the 100. It's okay to play it. So you just can play it with one die. But if you check the character sheet, you can see a lot of things. Remembers of old school game mechanics, statistics, and so on. So the game will be fully compatible with all game systems. There will be also a chapter where we clearly explain how to adapt it to the most known system out there. And indeed, the app that comes with the game that we unlocked during the Kickstarter campaign will be a very useful tool for every kind of role-playing game.
I want to get to that in a minute, because there was some really cool stretch goals on this Kickstarter that I want to go over in a minute. But the gameplay on there. So one thing I liked as I was going through the six start guide, the art style and everything is really cool and it's interesting. It's fun to flip through.
Let me say that it's.
But I'm not sure if you just froze,
which is one of the best heavy metal. Frozen for a while. So I was saying the art is by Roberto Todderico, which is one of the best heavy metal artists out there. He did the cover for a lot of metal bands in the European and American market. Asphyx, Dark Funeral, Dismember, so on and on and on.
And one thing that drew my eye, so once I realized this was a D10 system, as I'm scrolling through the PDF and I'm you know, kind of looking at stuff, I'm like, this looks awesome. And I noticed the page count down the bottom corner is this really nicely styled D10 as well. My only complaint, it stops at page 91. It didn't go all the way to 100. I was like, oh, come on. But
you're right.
Put in 9 filler pages, get it all the way there. But the art style in the book is awesome. One thing I've always seen with some of these books that have like these really amazingly intricate art styles is they're fantastic for folks like you and me. When we're flipping through them, either physical or visual, or reading them on a PDF. Have you had anybody talk about like screen readers and folks that can't see them as well? Because I know there's friends that try to get into Morkborg or what have you, and they had a problem because they can't see as well, so they weren't able to use the book and deal with the art style with it. Is that something you guys got, like a plain text version or anything?
Sure.
Like that?
And you didn't even saw the physical book, which has the dimension of a CD booklet. So it's really small, and it's really small written. And many people came to us, oh, it's wonderful, but fuck you. It's too small for me. And we were laughing about that. Talking about this, the final book will be bigger. It will be 22 per 22 centimeter. can't tell how many inches, sorry. It will be easier to read. About that pagination, that chaotic pagination, once again, we wanted to take the trope that it's very popular right now among OSR products, like you said, the Smorgborg and many others, and take it to the extreme. So there are also some writings which are almost upside down and stuff like that. So it's something that is challenging you. We want people to honestly come up with a big fuck you toward us and learn how a proper role-playing game should be made, not like this, you know.
Right. When anybody goes to the Kickstarter page, they are going to see right away, yep, just an amazing video. How that video came about, but that is awesome. It captures everything about the 80s and early 90s at least from my nostalgia memory, maybe not in reality, but my nostalgia memory of that time period is definitely captured in there. Who was behind the creative direction of that, and how did that come about? Are you in the video?
No, I'm not, but I'm the creative behind it. I did the script
on the back.
I did the lines. I did everything. Indeed, the monster is still in my house. The monster mask. Yeah. And also, I did the mask. I mean, I bought the mask, but I can do special effects. I did it in the past for some small movies, independent movies. And so I changed it all made the makeup. And the script, toys commercial in my childhood, which was the 90s, the early 90s, was a huge thing that stuck in my mind. So it was very easy to write something like that. And big nostalgia thing. Yeah.
it was great. And there's a cool soundtrack that's on the Kickstarter as well. You guys have kind of went the... Actually, I guess before I ask this question, is this the first Kickstarter you guys have done?
No, this is the fifth one. We did for Urban Heroes, we did for Xenoscape, and for the two board games we did, which is Dungeon Digger and Fantasy Podcast.
Yeah, I got to ask you about the Fantasy Podcast in a couple of minutes. So you guys have been around the block on the Kickstarter thing for a while. One of the common suggestions I hear people that are going in Kickstarter is, you know, be very careful about how many stretch goals you get, and be very careful about how many physical products you get. And you guys seem to have went, we've got this, we're going for it. And there's like vinyl, there's an app, there's
XPEX.
There's so much cool stuff in there,
which are the picks, which are the XP in the game. So the tokens will be picks. Regular picks. Yep. And we just unlocked a full comic book.
I didn't see that.
Just unlocked, which is a comic book, a cult comic book that in Italy we produced and was only spread among metal, punk, and hardcore concerts. So no distribution, because it's very lot of profanity in there and and it's real funny. It also comes with an inside game that you can play during festival and some characters that you can play with the true OSR, of course. So there's a bunch of things. So yeah, you have to, if you're going to, this is a suggestion, if you're going to start a Kickstarter, then had every single cost of everything, because you can get screwed with price, with shipping very easily.
So do you guys have, were the Kickstarter goals to reach certain things, was that were those things that you then have to develop when the goal gets unlocked, or were they things that you have ready to go but you don't have the production of them yet unless it got unlocked? So was it So like the comic book, for instance, was that already written and ready to go? And then as soon as the unlock hits, now you can distribute it? Or was it, no, we unlock this, so now we have to go and create a comic book for it?
Oh, no, 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 yeah. Well, some things, like, for example, the first two adventures we unlocked, they still have to be written. Well, indeed, one is already kind of written. We already play tested it. But not officially written. We have to add it and everything. So some things we just plan the cost and everything, but still have to be done. Well, the comic book is the collection of the single issues of the comic book that came out in the past, and it was only Italian, so we also did translation, and it's a collector edition, so it's something new. Right. But that was already done, colored and everything.
So how difficult is it from a logistics standpoint when you're trying to figure out this Kickstarter and you're going, okay, I need to go now deal with one company that's going to make a vinyl record for me, an actual production of the physical vinyl record. I need to deal with you know, a band of some sort that's going to be, or a musician or a band to create the audio that's going to go on this record. I need to go deal with another company that's going to create me my guitar picks for my token.
About that. you need a lot of organization ahead, but I got to say that since I started role playing at 8, when I started reading comic books too, and at 11, 12, I was already in the heavy metal scene, so
lots of contacts.
It was quite easy since I supported people a lot of time. My best friend is the singer from Carontan, Whiskey Ritual, since we were child. I toured Europe. I got to know a lot of people in that scene. So this was the time to have back some support from them, you know. But once again, the heavy metal family indeed do is a big, great worldwide family. Because everyone from all over the world that I knew came back to me, and I was like, yeah, I want to support you because you did to me. So it was really, really nice. About the tracks in the vinyl, the OST of the game, they've been composed by a couple of friends right now. One is the guitarist from Whiskey Ritual, and the other one is a singer from Calendula, and they are doing a very good job because each track represents a different style. So there's a cyberpunk theme, a post-atomic theme, a fantasy theme, a horror theme. So you will find the right song for the right setting you're playing.
Awesome. So you've gone through, you've got all that worked out. Everybody's coming back to you. From the business standpoint, I'm always interested when I hear of how a group is able to do this, especially, I guess, because I'm very North American centric, and I view that the market is your largest market in Italy, or in Europe, or is your larger market in the US or North America? Like where is your
about our market, you mean? Right now it's still in Italy because we got a huge fan base, 10 years of job here in Italy, even though we've been maybe the first one. Yeah, the first one doing a Kickstarter product from a role-playing game product in Italy, international. One of the first ones in Italy doing PDF stuff, because everybody here was like, oh no, if I do PDF, they're going to pirate me. Come on. If they pirate you, it means
they were going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, and it means it's good. So go pirates. and yes.
Greetings, fellow adventurers. Are you tired of your beard making you look like a goblin or a hobbit? Do you wish to have the glorious manes like the dwarves in your party do? Fear not. The Beard Hedger from Manscaped has arrived to save the day. This handy tool will shape and groom your beard with ease. It has multiple adjustments and can help you achieve the perfect length of your beard, whether you're going for a bold, battle-ready look or a more refined and polished style. The best part? With promo code REDCAP, you can get 20% off and free shipping on your order. That's a deal that's fit for a king or a mighty dwarvish warrior. So why settle for a mediocre beard when you can have a beard fit for a legend? Order your beard hedger from Manscaped today and let the adventures begin. Don't forget to use promo code REDCAP for your discount of 20% and free shipping.
So I guess if your largest audience is all within Italy, the shipping isn't killing you so much then as much as it would be for shipping across seas. I had done a conversation with the folks from Mary Mushman or in the Knock Zine. I'm not sure if you've heard of them before, but they're based out of France. And they had a lot of support from the government because they were able to get into grants and what have you that were like cultural type grants. So they could save on things like shipping and some other business expenses. Which
there's this kind of thing also in here, since Europe has all this kind of thing, but yet we're in Italy. In Italy, you expect sun, you expect pasta, you expect nice song. You don't expect to get held by your government, you know?
I think that sentiment, as far as the not necessarily always getting help, is probably universal. But it is interesting whenever you can hear, because you don't hear those same sorts of programs, or maybe they do exist and I just don't know about them. I think that's probably more likely here that when I hear about programs like that, And I wonder how many people that are in North America that are trying to go through this stuff has even know those sorts of programs exist. So that's why I always try to make sure I mention them, just in case there's somebody out there making whatever it may be. Go look and see if there's things that can help you out with that. And
no, about US. Actually, if you check what we put as shipping costs, we are finding a solution, a nice idea, in order to ship a bunch of books there. So somebody did do the actual shipping to people. So we are trying to keep our price as low as possible for, of course, Italy, most of Europe, and US. Actually, there are some places in Europe where the price is higher than the US shipping. You know,
oh, wow.
That's really crazy. That's really crazy.
So you mentioned that you've done some board games in the past. And a lot of them seem to have not necessarily the exact same. The one I'm going to mention, it doesn't have the same art style by any means, but it has a very unique and fun art style. And that was the pug game. So it's also got one of those. Again, it spoke to me of a, hey, here's a game. We're all going to laugh and joke about what the game is type idea, like just the way that it was being presented. And I like dogs, but I have a corgi. And I was like, oh, it's a pug game. And I scrolled down on the page and there's a picture of the corgi done up like a man, like a...
The Cole Griffin.
Yeah.
You mean?
Griffin. I almost said Manticore. You're right. And I was like, oh, that is amazing. But yeah, tell me about this pug game and what's this is all about.
Oh, well, that was the last board game we did, and it's a silly game about fantasy pugs, you know, where you have, it's a cooperative game, which it's also for kids, I would say, from 11 up to no problem. And yeah, young people have a lot of fun and can win. Because young people can cooperate. Older people always lose that game because they're greedy, you know? So it's a real game about cooperation among pugs, fighting pugs' enemies. Like we said, we have a core griffin, we have the evil feline mind, or for example, the chihuahua lynx, the dachshund hydra, or the demonic poodle. Well, everybody knows poodles.
They're straight demons spawn, yeah.
Yeah, they're straight demons, yeah. And it's really fun. We had a lot of fun also doing that. Also, the magic items you can find in the game, like the one color instead of the one ring, and are all parodies of classical fantasy tropes, you know.
So if you're going to sit down with your friends and you're going to play something that isn't one of your own products, so if you're going to play either a board game or an RPG game, whatever you prefer, what are you reaching for on the shelf to go play on a Friday evening when you got some friends over at the house and you're going to play something? What is it that you're reaching for generally?
Oh, wow. Not hard to tell, because I'm the forever master, you know. So I'm always the one that's gonna do that thing until I have my company. I just role play my games, but I would say right now I'd really like to play a proper old school games, especially one I've never played is Into the Odd, which looks really, really good, but I've never tried it. And another one I would like to play is Dungeon Crawl Classics, because I really like that. That
your aesthetic fits really well with Dungeon Crawl Classics. Like there's definitely an overlap in kind of the vibe that's there with those two. Yeah, it's also that beer and pretzels, Gonzo style. Actually, you mentioned Into the Odd. Chris McDowell was on this podcast, the creator of Into the Odd. He was on here. Yeah. I want to say late November, early December. But yeah, it was a great conversation with him too. His game's awesome. And he's kind of spun off. There's a whole series of games that are kind of all inspired by it. So like there's Karen, which is also inspired by Into the Odd. Yeah. And
seen that.
You have this pug game. I'm not sure. Have you seen the game Mouse Ritter?
Mouse Ritter.
Which is it's also inspired heavily by Into the Odd, but has that same aesthetic of the players are small creatures and what have you. So
or Pugmire. Pugmire is quite famous, you know, about pugs and sure. There are a lot of game with silly animals.
Yeah, exactly. With the entire aesthetic, let me rephrase that. What's the most serious part of the game? So the game is a lot of parody and it's a lot of tongue in cheek. Is there any nugget of like core seriousness in the game at all, anywhere, at any point?
Let me check, because I can't remember.
As he flips through. No, seriously.
No. Yeah, pretty much about that. No, the serious part is this game has been made with its own rules, because I'm a game designer. I don't like to take other system and adapt it to a setting. I always think it's always better to have the specific game mechanic for that game. So even this one, I wanted to put my signature on it, you know? But this game has been specifically made so that you can use this book as an instrument in whatever game you like. And once again, the app will be a great help for this.
Actually, yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about the app? So the app looks like it's a great way to, if you needed to get randomized items, it's like an app full of randomized lists and tables of different things. So yeah, can you speak a little bit about what that's all about?
Yeah, that's it. It looks easy, but it's not like any other randomizing app for a casual encounter or whatever else you can find on the market. Since in this app, you can get all the 45 tables that are going to be featured in the game, which range from death table, furniture table, cast table, archetypes table, which is the character class, and there would be more than 100, and magics, dungeon, whatever else you can think of, vehicles, buildings, and so on. And the app will let you do multiple randomization in just one click. What I mean is, in this game, you don't simply randomize when you randomize a monster, just okay, there's 10 goblins. No, in this game, you also randomize the age of the goblin. And they can also be mixed age. So, for example, a couple of goblin child, a couple of senior goblin, and so on. And they have different statistics, but also their equipment. So instead of rolling many dice, which is, you don't always have to do that, only if the player asks.
Right.
This is the base rule of the game, as I stated before. But instead of rolling so many dice, with just one click, the program will randomize multiple results. And one very fun feature will be the big bottom randomized character. Because it will randomize your species, your archetype, which is race and class. I don't really like the word race, so I always go for species in my role-playing games. And equipment. But the equipment in the game is a point-by system in order to get it. So randomizing it maybe comes out your Norc. Your archetype is, for example, cartoon or ranger or druid or vampire or whatever else. And your equipment is 1,000 marbles. And that's it. You're naked with 1,000 marbles.
That's going to be difficult to carry, isn't it?
yeah.
Where do you keep 1,000 marbles if you don't have any clothes? In your mouth, people. In your mouth. Come on.
Yeah, sure. So it would be really fun. Really, really fun also to randomize a bunch of randomic character that come out very, very, very weird, you know?
So you guys have created a few different role-playing games. You've created a couple of different board games. You as a game designer, is there a mental shift between the two? Like how is the design process different for somebody making a board game versus making a role-playing game? Like where's your mind go differently with those two things?
Well, I'm gonna start saying there's a connection point. First of all, and the connection point is certainly in the game, in the crunch of the game mechanics. About that, board games are really strict about mechanics. When you are when you are designing a board game, there's nothing that you can left out. Okay, everything must be scripted. I would say scripted, okay? So every possible outcome, you have to think ahead. You have to play test it, think ahead, see if it works. So everything is under control somehow. Of course, role-playing games, most of them are not scripted. Everything is about a shared fantasy. I would say, in between players and master, the theater of the mind, they call it. So this is quite different. The possibilities are quite always infinite. You can't predict every single outcome. So you have to make the best out of it. Okay. Of course, there are role-playing games which are very short on rules. Or the narrative ones, which are much more similar. I know I'm saying something weird, but somehow some of these games are much more similar to board games because they have a strict set of rules with a few things that you can do outside that box. They make you think that you can, but indeed the rules are really strict about it. So this is the main difference, I would say. Sorry if something is lost in translation.
No, it's fine. I'm completely.
My English is quite good.
Well, no, I've got everything that you're going with that. That makes complete sense in terms of just deciding, how strict the rule set's going to be. And yeah, if I was making a board game, I would have to play test it with like some of my really jerky friends, because I've got friends that will find every exploit they can possibly find in a rule set. They are the worst kind of rule lawyers. Yeah. And with a board game, you kind of need that, because otherwise you can unbalance it and basically have one way to win the game. You don't, with an RPG, there is no one way to win. So it's a little bit looser, but yeah, with a board game, if you don't have that locked down, you can completely unbalance the game altogether. I'm always interested when I'm speaking with folks that are into the scene.
Sorry, think about that. It's also probably the reason why there are power players in role-playing games and not in board games. Because you can, in role-playing games, you can always find that rule that you can exploit to do that thing in that particular situation. In board games, if the board game is well done, it's impossible to do that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The board game is designed to stop that play. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I never thought about that, but you're right. You're completely right. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Just came up to my mind now.
Yeah. No, that's completely valid. I'm always interested when I'm speaking with folks that kind of come up into the role playing scene and the gaming scene from outside of North America. Because I'm in Canada, but you know, the scene over here is very US centric, and it's so you see how things came up that way. So when you were growing up, you mentioned that you played Redbox, you played all that. What was the RPG scene like for you growing up? Was this something that was very prevalent, or was it very niche? Was it very a small group of people that were into it? And because you've mentioned a bunch of times the overlap between what you're doing now with the metal scene and the punk scene. Were those two scenes also very interlinked at that point too?
Well, not that much, but quite a lot. Because also heavy metal was a niche thing. So, for example, in my city, which is not a very big city, is like 100,000 people, something more. There were like me, another couple metalheads, and a couple punks. So it was just us, pretty much, and we were the underdog, and also that about the role-playing games scene and board game scene. So we were just hiding from society. We're the kind of guys in the 90s. Comic books, you were just a silly child if you read comic books. Nerds were nerds like in the past, and things do change a lot till our times back then.
Yeah, it's amazing to me about how we looked at the nerd and that culture that was around that versus how it's looked at now is dramatically different. It's not to put on my old man hat and cane and say kids these days don't realize how good they've got it, but really they don't realize how good they've got it compared to what they had in terms of how it was viewed by your peer groups would have you is completely different.
That's true. And nowadays there's people which used to make fun of me because I read comic book when I was young, that come up to me and was like, oh, you seen the last season of this TV series about superheroes? No, I haven't, and you did? what went wrong? what happened to the world? I don't know. Really, I don't know anymore.
Is there any game or band, because I'm sure you're quite plugged in with that folks over in North America wouldn't know very much about that you think, oh, you guys all like, if there was a band or a game from Italy that you could just drop into North America and have everybody be aware of it, what would it be that you think people should look at that we just don't see because it's a different market?
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. Well, about games, there are a bunch of friends of ours that are doing very good games, role-playing games. They started doing in English, and they're doing very good. So I would say Mana Project and Aces Games are two companies that you must look for because they do really good games. Especially Aces Games just did a campaign for VHS, which is a role-playing game about classic horror, and the box of this game is a VHS. You know,
I actually think I've seen that one around. I think I saw that one going through on the
That's really crazy. That's really crazy. And about band, a shout out goes to my friends Caronte, which do one of the best doom metal I've seen, I've heard in the last 10 years. I mean, and Black Gremlins, all bands that contributed to our book, and that still tour Europe, so check out also their dates, you know.
Awesome.
I hope to come with these bands to your country, because I love US. I've been there a lot of times. I also been to the San Diego Comic-Con once. Dream of my life. Dream of my life. You know, for a European, getting to San Diego Comic-Con is really life dream, you know.
Yeah, and I have not been there. I've not gotten to. I'm up in the northeast of Canada, and I've not gotten down to the far west coast of the U.S. to go to that either. That would be really cool to go see, though. I agree.
That was really great. I met in person people from Trauma. I mean, I've been almost adopted by Lloyd Kaufman. yeah, really, because when he found out I was Italian, I was a big fan. It was like, oh, come on here. This is my wife. This is
my...
It treated
me
like a child. It was great. So, I hope to come very soon. I'm planning, maybe, since our friends from Mana Project did came last year and won a Nanny Award also, I plan to come to GenCon also.
Oh, very cool. When does the Kickstarter wrap up?
The Kickstarter is gonna end on 22 February, so people be fast and pledge that game.
And where can they go and find out all the information about Tin Hat Games, this Kickstarter, and all your other stuff? Where should they go?
Oh, well, I'm not a tech guy, so I'm not very much on the social media, but my colleague Matteo has all the social media under control. So just type Tin Hat Games and you will find us. Twitter, awesome. Instagram, Facebook, everywhere.
I will also link a bunch of them down in the show notes of the show for anybody who's looking.
Great.
I got one last question for you. It's a question I ask everybody at the end of the show. And I'm sure you've either done other interviews in the past, or whenever I approached you, it was like, hey, can you come on the podcast? You probably were like, oh, I'm going to get asked a bunch of questions and maybe thought about it a little bit. Or maybe not, because I know you're quite busy. But was there something that I should have asked you through here that I didn't? Or is there something that you wish somebody would ask you so you could talk about it? Like, is there something like you're like, man, I wish somebody asked me about this so I can go on about it a little bit more? And if so, what is that?
Let me think about it. No, there's nothing peculiar, but maybe about OSR, we could have talked about our OGL.
Oh, sure.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. How did that impact you at all?
Just like it did as always. So no impact at all. No impact at all. Come on. So we published the True OSR OGL, which is the Open Fuck You license, which tells you that we have the right to fuck off you whenever we want, and you have the right to do that too. And if you still believe something written in a license by a big company, multinational company, well, you are the stupid one, because that's how capitalism works, and that's what you should not do. Come on, people.
Yeah, it is nice that there's a little bit of certainty now with things being released into the Creative Commons license side of things. I do still hope that there's some pressure kept on Wizards to release the older games to the Creative Commons as well, because they didn't do that. But I was wondering if it had any impact on you at all. But you have changed your system enough, and like you said, yours isn't based on the old system; it was something of your own. So
yeah, sure. Yeah, well, the thing is, it's very fun because, yeah, people is also claiming, yeah, the new OGL by Paizo would be
Orc.
The Orc, yeah, would be like Linux. So it will not be held by that company, yet it's held by an outside company. Come on, people, just do your research on the internet. If Linux people want to take back their license, they can. There's no way they cannot. Even though they told you, oh, now it's safe. People, don't trust companies.
Yeah. Please. Companies are not, no company is looking after you. They're looking after themselves and their shareholders.
Sure. If they go to, what's the name, to a bureaucrat in order to ask, okay, we want to take back this license, there's no bureaucrat that will say no to them. Just because they wrote, no, for sure, we will promise, we will never do that. Come on, don't trust them. Don't trust them. It's company. Don't trust nobody. Try to be a responsible consumer.
Yeah, trust yourself and make your own things, I think is probably.
Yeah. That's another way to tell it.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come talk to me. I know there's the time zone difference, so it's getting later in the day for you now.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Just getting dinner in a while.
But yeah. I hope everybody can go in and check out the true OSR, which again is true OSR is what? Obsolete, shitty
rules.
and check it out. The huge props goes to the art style and everything in the product. And really great job with how you guys laid out the Kickstarter. Like I said, as soon as you fire up those videos and you see the imagery, it is like a kick of nostalgia right in the butt. It's just pure fun to look at, just a Kickstarter page. So I can't wait to see how the actual full product comes out.
Sure. You'll see.
So congratulations on all of that. And thank you very much for coming on and having a chat with
me. Oh, thank you for asking me. It was a very nice chat indeed. So thank you very much.
Awesome.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Red Caps podcast. I hope you enjoyed, you learned something, and that you are eager to come back for more. www.theredcaps.net has all the links to all the ways to contact me, and I would love to hear from you. Thank you ever so much for listening. And remember, never let your caps dry out. Stay safe, have fun. We'll talk again soon.